Bakemonogatari
is the series that comes after Kizumonogatari. That's the fucking reason.
Oh. I've hit the record button already, Bree, so you're...
Bakemonogatari!
Which is why I'm glad you started doing that.
Oh, wait, this is Happy Anniversary?
Yeah, there
happy
you go.
Anniversary.
It's the day after Happy Anniversary, and it's the day before my birthday.
Your anniversary is over, and the bad times continue.
What an auspicious... What an auspicious eve we are deciding to record on for this episode.
Let me pull out my note.
What reviews connected by cast or crew deciding the next film? That's the gist. Put it on the list.
For this episode of Put It On The List. By the way, hi everyone, and welcome to Put It On The List.
The second in-person...
That's right.
Recording.
I think we'll be
Evie
able to...
is cocooning, and soon she will become a beautiful butterfly when it's warmer out.
Listen, we can't talk about the people on this podcast until we properly introduce everyone. So first person in the rotation, hi, and welcome to Put It On The List, the Movie Club podcast, where every couple of weeks we gather together to discuss a movie, and the next person that picks out a movie has to connect it by either cast... or crew. First person distracted by Bisky writhing on the floor behind her. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Bridget.
You're the one to blame for all this.
I'm the closest thing to a chaos agent without intending to be.
It's so... I can't
get
into
we'll get
it
to
yet.
It. We'll get to it.
I'm Evie.
Yeah,
hey everyone, I'm Brie.
And I'm Jay. And we are gathered here today because last time on Put It On The List, I had us watch Baz Luhrmann's William Shakespeare's Romeo Plus Juliet, which was a delightful time for everyone involved. And then...
today is a roundtable interrogation.
Bridget decided to take us to Kizumonogatari Koyomi Vamp, which... I can't even, like, do justice, like, just tersely introducing it, because it's a whole bag of worms for us to get into.
It's a vampire film for Halloween.
It sure is a vampire film for the Halloween season. But speaking of the Halloween season, what's everyone been up to lately? Brie, are you okay? Has there been any peaks of light and happiness into your life?
I hung out with yesterday, before today happened. Yesterday, I was hanging out with a friend of mine, a good friend of ours, who she introduced me to a wonderful local bakery, just a small company run by wonderful people, and their sourdough. I mean,
it's
we
good.
All just had it, like, goddamn, right?
That's a good fucking sourdough. I am... among this table, I'm probably the utmost sourdough appreciator, and that's a good ass sourdough, I must say. And that's the main thing you've been doing.
Oh, I think I mentioned on the last podcast that I finished a doujin, and like I recently, right now I'm just working on an illustration, trying to like revamp my OCs and make them interesting to me again. Huh?
Re-Koyomi vamp.
How do you mean?
Don't worry about it. I'm making a dumb joke.
I'm working on, you know, just like kind of... I'm updating my style. I'm trying new brushes. Hey, if you're an artist out there, get a new pen. Try new textures. Fuck around. Have fun. That's how you keep making it fun.
That's how you keep life exciting. Bridget, yeah. You look like you're trying to keep the discussion exciting. What were you trying to say over there?
Oh, I was just saying Kizumonogatari is on audiobook as well in English.
Which that's part of the things that we will get into at some point or another. But Bridget, what have you been up to?
I just want to know, I thought Brie was going to say, I was introduced to Strike Witches.
Jay asked for bright spots in my life.
I mean, you said you had a fun time watching it at the very least.
In the way that, like, watching Charge Man Ken is a shared experience of laughing at suffering. Look, here's what I'm going to say after my friend introduced me to that, to Strike Witches. Let me explain what it is. What if World War II was shot entirely through the lens of an underage woman's panties from the bottom back angle of it? From an artist that only knows how to draw one set of Mons pubis and ass cheeks. Brie, and just keeps fucking doing it.
That's maybe the most generous assessment of Strike Witches I think anyone has ever given it.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest. However, Charge Van Ken update. Stocks. Wait, where were stocks on
the chart? Stocks were pretty high last time.
Stocks were all right.
I thought they started to take a dip, like, right at the end.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was starting to go bad at the end. But, like, for the most part.
We had a string of, like,
terrible episodes.
Terrible thumbs up episodes.
No. We had
before.
Yeah. Since the last time we recorded, we continued to watch Charge Man Ken, and my glowing praise of it was short lived because we basically found out that the appreciation of Charge Man Ken is as volatile as the stock market, because there are some episodes that are great, and then there are some episodes where it's the fucking pits. Like, nothing good happens in it, like, even in a entertainingly bad way. Instead, you just have to watch very poor animation, if you can even call it animation, happening.
Storyboarding at best. I would say, honestly, it's very much like dumpster diving, where it's like, am I going to find good garbage that I can kind of use, or am I just going to find garbage, you know?
Yeah, but thankfully, in the last night or so, we finally hit a string of good episodes again. So.
Good episodes, like aliens just setting up a tree that has nooses on it and hoping it just works.
Essentially, aliens giving a guy, like, the low-tier god speech of, like, you should kill yourself now!
Like, not only having a noose at a kid's show, but the encouragement of suicide. And then he's like, no, I don't want to!
Or the episode where they're like,
do it!
They kill a scientist only to revive him again, except now he has a bomb in his head.
The episode is literally called Dynamite in the Head. Yeah. And that is the appeal.
And with Charge Man Ken just, like, dropping this man as a bomb.
This living man!
I believe Brie referred to it as a homicide bomb.
Yes, a homicide bomb.
was the way she, the term she coined for it, which is pretty good, I must say.
Which I trademarked that. Don't use that.
Plus two. Good job. But yeah, that's the Charge Man Ken update. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything else you want to talk about?
I guess since then, I want to watch more of Sanda. That's a new anime season, so...
It seems cute.
It's not so much that it's cute. It's more that it's very interesting. It's a very... odd conceit for a show.
What if Santa Claus was the Incredible Hulk?
But also, what if he was tasked with trying to solve, like, a kidnapping case at a high school?
There's been a kidnap.
There's been a kidnapping. Turn into Santa and blow up this classroom.
Turn into a holiday-themed all-night and get her back to the school.
But that first episode was pretty good.
It's Santa Claus' job to let the lesbians reunite.
Santa says now Kith.
Extremely comfy Eevee. What updates do you have for us?
If we had the green screen on, you'd be a floating head. You'd be zombie.
That's funny. There's, I don't know, not too much. I've started playing, we've continued to play Hades 2. That game's okay.
Communal family Hades 2.
Yeah, we've all been playing.
Except
it
for Bree. I don't think
Bree's
you
not been into.
Care about
it. No, Hades. But I've been mildly intrigued because it has Father from Kids Next Door in it, so I was like, oh, maybe.
Anyway, that game's fine. But I've been playing some Baby Steps. That game is great. Not just because... to back up, it's a game from Benefati is like the biggest name attached with it, but there's multiple people involved.
Which Benefati, known primarily first and foremost
for Quap,
being the guy who made that game, and then
getting over it
with Benefati.
Yeah, and it's another game in that vein where you play as this like 36-year-old fail son. Who is like basically like
isekai'd.
He's bed corpsing in his parents' basement, and then gets isekai'd into a strange place, seemingly inhabited entirely by Australians.
I hate being taken to a place.
It's my favorite anime, Re-Australia. Waking up in a place that's definitely Australia.
And so you control this he's in a onesie the entire time. So he is like a giant baby man. Mm-hmm. And you control him as he tries to traverse this environment and encounters all the strange places and people. And like as a game, it is tons of fun to try to get this guy to walk, but also it's just very funny. It's a very funny game. Mm-hmm. In terms of like you expect a game to be funny in its mechanics, just based on, you know, that's the kind of games that Benefati is associated with. But also it's just like very, very well written. And someone put it, I've seen it put it a couple different ways, where one, it's like Mr. Rogers for men with broken brains. another way I've heard it is like, it's like Silent Hill characterization applied to a comedy.
Weird.
And I think that's those are very evocative ways to put what that game is doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna play more of that. It's been good so far.
For sure. Glad to hear. I mean, the main update I have is that hasn't already been mentioned is three of us went and saw One Battle After Another yesterday. Yeah. That movie's fucking great.
Yep. Very good movie.
It's such a good movie that I do not want to talk about it too much here because it is a rich text, to say the least, but highly recommended. Just go see it. If you have seen anything about it, just go see that movie. It's a great movie. It'll revitalize you. It'll revitalize Bisky, as you can see here.
Yeah, we've radicalized Bisky.
We have radicalized the Bisky. But yeah, that's catch up with everyone, seeing how we're all doing. I think that's the fastest we've ever gotten to through a catch up.
This might be a brisk episode.
We're getting good.
I don't know if it's going to be a brisk
episode. Oh, it will. I have nothing to say.
Well, I feel like I have more to say about it.
Yeah, I feel like I do have things to say about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a brisk lead up to what the discussion is going to be. But before we get to the discussion, there is some listener feedback, which you can send us listener feedback at putitonthelist.bsky.social. It's a terrible website. Try not to use it as much as you can, but when you do use it, follow us on there.
We do have an email.
We do also have an email.
Use that instead if you can.
Yeah, which that's wifecitygaming@gmail.com. We have some emails, but we also have some listener feedback over on Blue Sky. But also, follow us on putitonthelist.neocities.org.
We're bringing back NeoCities. Let's go.
GeoCities.
GeoCities. We're bringing back GeoCities through NeoCities. Yes. That's what we're doing. We're part of the... We're the good internet. We're fixing it.
That's right. The Neo Geo.
The Neo GeoCities.
So we got some listener feedback here.
All right, what do you got?
One of them, just the most recent one, is Passion Tentacle.
Ruby.
Yes, Ruby, aka Passion Tentacle on B-Sky, expresses excitement at us talking about the movie that we're going to discuss because they say, oh, hell yeah, I would love to hear how folks that aren't knee-deep in this franchise react to this film, and boy howdy, you're gonna hear it. But before that, we have some stuff from Owen as well, regular contributor to feedback here. Owen says, Evie wants more straight adaptations of Shakespeare, so I might recommend a little film based on Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus called Titus, which stars beloved Welsh actor Anthony Hopkins.
Really? Huh, interesting. Okay, I've never heard of this before.
Hey, Evie, does this connect to Titus?
It does not, I must say.
I hate to say it. She would have to use a wild card if we wanted to get there from here. But Owen also says, I was so confused last episode by Bree talking about the episode of Dexter as narrated by a child that it wasn't until after all the moral oral talk that I realized she meant Dexter's Lab and not Dexter the show about the serial killer. I think they should put her on the radio. You know.
Thank you. Oh, Dexter, you are... Didi, you are so stupid. Meanwhile, Dexter's, like, stabbing
the illustration has been made many times.
Mm, yeah, it's just bound to exist on here.
Yeah, I know I've seen it.
Ibisky. And then we have an email from Owen as well, asking us... Are you disappointed that Bridget did not pick The Pest starring John Leguizamo? I guess now's the perfect time for this question. Bree, are you disappointed that she didn't pick The Pest by John Leguizamo?
Is it better than this film?
I don't know. I've never seen The Pest
starring
John Leguizamo.
Then I can't say I know.
Okay. A neutral stance from Bree. Evie, are you disappointed that Bridget didn't pick The Pest starring John Leguizamo?
No, I'm not disappointed that she didn't pick The Pest.
I was never going to pick The Pest. Why was he suggesting
I will also
because
say
you
that
you could have picked The Pest if you didn't.
I will also say that I was not disappointed that she didn't pick The Pest. In fact, I'm happier that she picked this than The Pest, because at the very least, there are things that I think are interesting about this movie.
The proposed pest picking prediction was, predetermined.
Preemptive.
Probably.
And then also in that same email, Owen says, for some reason, my library has a large number of Monogatari soundtracks available for streaming, and sends a screen cap with all the various Monogatari song albums. I know exactly which song he sent without even having to play the thing. It's he sent Renai Circulation, which is that Fura Fura Di Fura Fura.
That song specifically gets memes. The AMV, then Mans.
Anyways, Bridget, why did you give us a cursory summary on Kizumonogatari for us?
Like the plot of the movie or how this movie was made?
Explain what it is.
Yeah, explain the movie first and then we can get into like production and stuff.
Okay, so this movie is about a shit kid who...
That's put it generously.
Actually, I meant the inverse. Like, let's talk about what the movie is, and then we could talk about the substance of it.
Oh, okay. So I think she means you're going to tell us about why you picked this specifically and not the individual pieces. Like, what is this movie made up of?
Okay, so this movie is made up of three separate movies that are about an hour each.
And this movie clocks at about 2 hours and 15 minutes, somewhere around
so
there.
So it roughly cuts about, like, I don't know, like an hour-ish.
Yeah, it cuts about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Is mainly out of the second movie, but it's a combination of these movies that were announced in 2011 and then didn't come out for a number of years.
I mean, they were basically announced. So I think at this point we talk about what the Monogatari series is in general, because the Monogatari series is a series of light novels that center around a character named Koyomi Araragi, who... Essentially, he's not so much a monster hunter, but he's like a monster problem solver, effectively, where...
Attractor, too.
Yeah.
So it's like that anime with the snake girl, basically.
Which snake girl?
The guy who, like, helps adapt all of the beast women into...
That's a wild connection to make, but Bree, you're actually more right than you.
You're more right. I guess the difference is that dude somehow at least gets a girlfriend.
Well, I mean, Araragi basically gets a girlfriend,
yeah.
Too.
Oh, no,
you mean... Well, I mean, the guy in the Monster Musume gets multiple girlfriends.
He has a harem.
We can't get bogged down talking about Monster Musume. We need to talk about...
Where's the Monster Musume movie?
We need to talk about Shumanetta.
So that was the thing that I, like, I looked at the Wikipedia page for this movie, like, shortly before we started recording. Mm-hmm. And that was something that surprised and slightly horrified me to find that, like, this like, the movie we watched is a prequel to this other series. And the main character of this movie is the main character of that series. And presumably does not treat him as a fucking monster.
As a monster he deserves to be treated as.
Yeah, so we're not getting
bogged down into it.
But yeah, it centers around Araragi going around and solving problems for people who have been afflicted by, like, yokai, monsters, things of that nature.
However, this movie is the starting point history-wise of...
It essentially tells you how he gets into the position to be able to do something like that. Because as someone who... So did this movie, the original movie for Kizumonogatari, get announced, like, basically right after Bakemonogatari was made?
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
And then it's... there is a preview trailer of when they announce it. The animation and character designs do not look super simple. Like, some animation looks the same, but I have no idea what happened in production to cause it to just be delayed years and upon years to the point where people thought it was just not going to come out.
No, yeah, that was, like, the big joke surrounding the Monogatari series, that, like, with each season of the TV show that would get made, people would be like, where's Kizumonogatari? Like, where's this fucking, like, I need to know what led us to where we are in here. But the thing that leads us to where we are in here is that Kizumonogatari is specifically the story of Araragi one night finding a vampire lady named Kisha Arisola Orion Heart Underblade, who, in a subway, like, having had all of her limbs cut off, basically on the verge of death, and he decides to save her and try to bring her, like, get those limbs back for her. And, you know, through a series of events, we end up at the start of the Monogatari series, like, properly.
Well, like, he saves her by, you know, giving his blood to her. Like, he lets her... Like,
he assumes he's gonna die.
Yeah, he assumes he's gonna be killed by it. But no, instead she makes him into her minion.
Yeah, her thrall, more or less.
Yeah, and he is then tasked with getting her limbs back.
Yes, and I could tell that this was going to be a good experience right off the bat, because early on in that movie, there's a shot of Araragi and one of the other major characters in the movie, Hanakawa, like, walking towards each other as they go towards school, and a gust of wind blows down the street and blows up her skirt as her breasts boob jiggly, and you get to see the lace panty she's wearing, and I just hear Evie on the other side of the couch go...
Yeah, and Jay let out the loudest laugh that could...
That happens after the opening segment, where it's just, like, wordless animation of this guy, like, ascending, like, a building. Yeah, like a huge building, like, ascending this massive staircase.
The gorilla's house, basically.
Yeah, and he pops out onto the roof of this place while it's, like, all overcast, and then the sun breaks through and he bursts into flame because he's a vampire now.
And, like, It is, like, strikingly animated and presented, but also it left me feeling like, what the fuck are we watching?
Yeah, what exactly is the ride that I'm in for? And I guess to kind of, like preface the emotions that I have towards this thing, I think aside from Bridget, I'm probably the person here with the most experience with the animation studio that worked on this project, Shaft. Mm-hmm. And if you know Shaft, especially of the time period that the original Monogatari series, like, comes out, like, kind of mid-aughts to, like, the early 2010s, very, very early 2010s. They were very much a studio known for working on, like, shoestring budgets and more or less, like, making their shows pop more so from, like, just general style over, like, the actual, like, animation part of it. Because one of the kind of a refrain, essentially, that is present in this movie is, like, there will be multiple times during scenes that, like, a title card flashes on screen that has, like, just a stark color on the screen and, like, the text noir or rouge or blanc for, like, white, black, red, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that is, like, a very, like, stylistic trademark of Shaft from that time period. And also, like, they very much would work with, like, mixed media in their animation projects. Like, you look at stuff like Kitamari's Sketch, Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei. These are all television series that, like, really dabbled in that kind of how much can we experiment and do with the budget that we have and the time that we have in our medium. And it's the thing that I appreciate the most about them and about this movie as, like, a project is, like, it's Shaft is always very striking in the way that they present their projects at the end of the day.
Oh, they also worked on Madoka Magica.
Yes, which the turning point.
Which ties in that this and Madoka Rebellion would have been worked on in a similar time frame.
Yes, and Madoka kind of ends up being the turning point for Shaft, where they become more of, like, I don't want to say standard, but they become more of, like, a, like, less of an underdog, like, just kind of, like, getting by as they can, more of, like, a, okay, some people will just go to Shaft for projects now, you know? But
you can definitely see the connection there, like, in particular with, like, the mixed media type stuff.
Yes, like, there's a lot of, like, I love the way that there are parts of this movie where it's essentially just the characters being animated over, like, real photos of, like, of settings and the like. Like, it's super striking in those regards. There's, like, the section where Heart Underblade is talking about, like, the first thrall that she had, where it's, I wish I could remember the animator's name because they've worked on a lot of Shaft projects, but they always specifically, like, they are very influenced by, like, Russian, Eastern European, like,
yeah,
paper doll animation.
Yeah, they're the ones who do the witch designs and, like,
yes.
Madoka.
Yeah. That is the thing that I would say I take away the most from this project is, like, it's a gorgeous movie, like, aesthetically and animation wise like, I feel it even more so than, like, when we were watching the Horse Girl anime.
This is far more, like, you can see the artistry far more as far as, like, a style, a unique look compared to, like,
The Horse Girl.
The Horse Girl one.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying is, like, I felt kind of the problem that I talked about when we were watching the Umamusume movie was that, like, the animation is great and you can feel the passion in there, but it did not gel as much with the story being told. At the very least with this movie, it gels more with the story being told there versus that movie. If we got a fussy puppy underneath the recording table.
So fussy.
Yeah. So that's, like, my biggest, like, thing about it that I appreciate. However, Bridget, I'm kind of mad at you. Not mad at you. I'm kind of upset that we went with this movie and did not go with the individual movies in that Kizumonogatari series because I, as someone who watched Bakemonogatari at the very least, like, the way you phrase it is, like, it cuts out, this compilation cuts out a lot of the, like, kind of, you describe it as meandering, like, lots of just characters talking.
Well, it's like specific scenes that tie more into Bakemonogatari itself than...
Okay, so stuff that you feel like is more kind of just serves as being more referential than it does, like, the actual, like, story being told. But, like, for me, part of the essential part of, like, the Monogatari series is that the show is, like, it's the reason why I knew that, at the very least, Brie was going to hate this movie, and that Evie would probably have problems with it, is, like, the Monogatari series is...
bad.
It's meandering. Like, it is a meandering, like, story, because it's just, like, all really housed in the dialogue and the back and forth between these characters. And if you do not, like or get to, like, take part in those conversations between them all, like, in their full force, then it's just gonna fucking bounce all the way off of you. And
put,
like,
a pin in that for my final thoughts.
But, like, that ended up being the thing, is, like, I, like, especially with, like, the almost weird, like, it's not quite a love triangle, but, like, in the relationship dynamic between, like, Araragi, Hanekawa, and Heart Underblade, like, it's by, like, not giving you as much interactions with those characters and kind of just having to, like, speed through everything, it doesn't really feel like you get to take in the entirety of that relationship between those relationships between the three of them. And thus, when you actually get to the payoff of, like, heightened scenes and climaxes, it just kind of is like, I mean, this looks gorgeous and the action is fucking great,
but it hits flat.
It kind of hits.
I don't care about these people for whom the meandering is all there is about them.
I think the last, like, end sequence is phenomenal. Like, it's such gory, violent spectacle that even without the emotional impact, like, we were all, or not all of us, Brie wasn't, but the three of us over here were still, like, popping off to it regardless. What were you gonna say, Bridget? Sorry.
My other thing is, even with some of those scenes in, I don't think these two would have had any difference in opinions.
Oh, I don't think they would. Like, that is the key thing here, is I don't think, regardless of which version of this movie we saw, these two would have liked this movie anymore.
It would have been more digestible, because, in smaller chunks, at least.
But I think it allows you to more take into account how much of a piece of shit Araragi is, because, like, an idiot. He's the worst. Araragi sucks, and the movie, like, caps it off well at the end, but, like, you need to know that he's just a piece of shit pervert who just wants to stare at girls' panties. Like, and that shit is, like, palpable when you actually are, like, having conversation, like, extended conversations with that guy. Like, you see in the television series.
On the flip side,
series.
If the 20-minute scenes talking about panties were in, we just watched the first movie, I think I would be burned.
Oh, sure.
That movie's only an hour long, and 20 minutes of it
are spent talking about panties. But
at least Chainsaw Man knows what he is. You know,
sure.
At least he goes, yeah, I only care about fucking boobs, and he's honest about it. Yeah.
But I guess the greater point that I'm trying to make there is that, like, regardless of what they cut out or don't cut out, like, the people who aren't in it who can't vibe with that character are still not going to vibe with that character, even in the chopped down version. My way of seeing it is just like, no, if you're gonna make me sit through this character, make me fucking sit through this character for all the fucking blemishes on him, even if it is, like, a 20-minute discussion about lace panties or whatever.
I understand what you're saying. However, for this podcast format, I was not gonna just make it
The first.
You weren't going to spend three. You weren't going to spend three choices on.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. That's an interesting.
This film that you admitted earlier on in the podcast was bad.
I don't think it's bad. I think it has good parts and it has bad parts.
I think it's a deeply poorly paced movie.
Huh?
I said I think it's a deeply poorly paced movie.
Yes.
Like the first half of this movie is fucking rough.
Could that have to do with the fact that they're trying to make three movies into one movie?
Yeah, I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that they're trying to make three.
I'm curious,
movies.
Where do you think each movie cuts off?
If I had to guess, I think the first movie probably ends with the dramaturgy thing.
Mm-mm.
No? Does it end before the dramaturgy?
Yeah.
Okay.
It ends with Oshino showing up.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
The first movie is largely just the stuff we saw.
Yeah. I feel like if I had to guess, the first movie is, you know, all the way up to Oshino showing up. The second movie is the fights with, you know, the three assholes. Mm-hmm. And the last movie is Araragi having the falling out with Kishot and mm-hmm. then the fight.
Yep.
Yeah.
I said before, but the second movie is the one that has the most things cut out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, like, when you were at the end of the second movie and we paused it, and it had a whole hour left because it's almost the whole full...
I thought the movie was basically done.
But, like, that...
Oh yeah. That's... There was still an hour left when Evie and I were just like, is it over yet? Please tell me it's almost over.
But that, to me, that speaks to how much of an injustice cutting down those first two movies is.
Oh, the first movie isn't cut down that much.
But it's still cut down, though.
Yeah, like, a little.
But it's still cut down. Like,
ladies and gentlemen, Vampy and the Three Assholes!
Like, I think the thing that, like, would probably help this movie series sit at least a little bit better with everyone here is if shit had been allowed room to breathe, like, because...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, like, I feel like the thing that made, like, the last third of it, like, not quite work for me is that I didn't get why Kishot and Araragi were about to fight. Like, it seems like it skipped over a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't really see the argument that they have, like, at all.
Yeah, like, we don't get any of that. Like, it's just, like, you are left purely with the implication of, like, for some reason, like, there... Because there's... seems to be some implicit, like... Araragi just seems to have it in his head that, like, she's going to snap her fingers and he's automatically not a vampire anymore.
Yeah, I think if it built that and, like, because, like, I didn't understand that something would need to happen in order for him to not be a vampire anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just suddenly he doesn't get it.
He's,
like,
deeply stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing is more he's just stupid.
Well, like, they should have showed me that. They should have shown me that he doesn't understand that someone will have to die in order for him to be a human again. Like, I think, like, even if it's, like, even if a lot of the stuff that got cut out of the three movies is just, like, stuff that underlines the point that Araragi is a stupid dickhead and he doesn't understand the situation that he's in, like... I need that. I need that in order for the character to cohere for me. And also just like there's, like, the section where, like, Kishot is, like, a little kid and is, like, talking and all this kind of stuff. And then, like, she kind of just disappears as a character for most of the remaining runtime until it becomes time for her to, like,
be the big girl again.
Yeah, be the big girl again and, like, have her heel turn.
Time for me to be the big girl.
But yeah, she, like, although admittedly, I will say it's...
But, like, yeah, I know, like, if there are more scenes of Araragi and Kishot talking while she's not the big girl, those would not be good scenes to sit through.
No, yeah.
They would, like, be bad to sit through.
We don't need more, like, a 100-year-old vampire Lily. And the other thing is, like Evie was saying, the him not realizing he's a vampire because he became a vampire thing really hit me, like Goblins 2. Like, he saw Trolls 2, excuse me, where he looked into a fucking mirror and he was like,
we did watch Trolls 2.
And I was like, oh no, it's Goblin backwards. Like, but with, like, vampire.
Yeah,
and he saw vampire the right way in the street sign. He's like, oh no! Like, it was that kind of stupidity that would have allowed for that in the plot. Like, he's so
Evie gets exactly what I'm trying to put down, where it's like, no, you need Aragaki being a stupid piece of shit, like, to, like, really nail down how he is so stupid that he doesn't realize that he's a fucking vampire who has to feast on human beings.
Yeah, there's just not enough character development for me to care about anyone. So, yeah.
Like, especially for Hanakawa, like, I feel like...
she is probably the one who... Not that I think...
Here's a question.
I hate Monogatari. Did I mention...
Here's a question. Hanakawa, is she a major character in Bakemonogatari?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay, all right. Because, like, for a second, I thought you were going to tell me, oh, no, she disappears as soon as the series starts.
She is a major player in that series.
Okay.
Which is Jay, which character from Monogatari do you think you are?
Oh, I see. She's calling me Hanakawa.
I'm the fire trying to kill everybody.
The sun?
Yes. I am the sun.
But, like, she is the character that is most shafted, like, in terms of development in this movie. I wasn't even trying to do that on purpose, if I'm being honest. Because, yeah, like, at the very least, you can kind of, like, scrape together some stuff for Kishot and Araragi, but, like, Hanakawa is just kind of continuously thrust into the middle of these, like, encounters and just kind of suffers the blowback, and that's it.
Yeah, she has that one scene where, like, Araragi is trying to be like,
oh, you have to leave me alone.
I can't sacrifice you for that, and she has that moment where she's like, no, I'm here because I want to be here.
Yeah.
Inexplicable.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's okay. She comes there at his saintly time of need, and then he rips her face.
That's just a dream that he has.
It's still a good scene.
Yeah,
it's great.
That is, like, the one moment of like good character development that Hanakawa has, where she is, like, insisting that, like, no, you don't have to treat me like. You don't have to treat me like I don't have agency in this situation, because, like, I'm here because I want to be here, and I get satisfaction out of this.
Yeah, and, like, that kind of ends up being the continuing arc of her character through a lot of the Monogatari series, is kind of being the person that's just like, no, I'm fucking here for you.
Yeah.
Like, this, like, I'm, whether it's, you know... like, romantically, platonically, whatever, like...
Here because I just like weird
perverts who sentence a immortal vampire to just be stuck as a little girl for the rest of her life.
God, he had a Claudia at the beginning, but he really has a Claudia at the end of the movie. Like, goddamn, dude.
Oh my god.
You shouldn't like making a Claudia, that's a bad outcome. You shouldn't be
Do you want to explain what that means?
Okay, yeah. Claudia is one of the choices I had for my choice was Interview with a Vampire.
Okay.
Yeah, Claudia is a character from Interview with a Vampire who is, she is someone who was made into a vampire when she was a little girl. And so she's perpetually a little girl. And she is like, and she is not happy about it. Like, she's a character who engages with that idea and is...
It's Baby Doll from the Batman cartoon.
Yeah. Baby Doll's a good... No, that's a genuinely good comparison.
I just haven't thought of Baby Doll in a while, and I remember what Baby Doll looks like.
But continue.
But yeah, like, it is... She is... It is, like, kind of... Hers is an existence that is, like... It's a miserable one. And, like, they do sort of underline that in this movie particular when Oshino is like, oh, there's a way where everyone here can be miserable. And like
he says, figure out how to make everybody happy. Are you stupid?
No, like, yeah, no way. Yeah. We're kind of skipping a hill over here. But yeah, like,
I mean, to be fair, they're like, at the very least in this compilation that we watched, like, a lot of that first half of the movie, unfortunately, like, ends up feeling like chaff because, like, it is not paced the way it was originally meant to be paced. So it kind of just feels like you're almost going through the motions a little bit on these things. Like, don't get me wrong, some of the fight scenes are very funny. Like, when he's going against Dramaturgy and he first starts, like, throwing baseballs at him, and then he's, like, throwing shot put balls at the guy's head. Like, that's
like
great.
Those fights aren't unchanged, but, I do like the beginning of the fight where he, like, just towers over him and he's like...
Yeah, he starts trying to punch him and Dramaturgy just
literally
kicks his arm off.
Yeah.
Like, you just a clean cut. Like, there are so many, like, clean cuts of limbs, like, just flying off of bodies
okay.
in this film.
But before we jump to the fights, I do want to go back to the scene where... Araragi finds Kishot in the subway because, like, I think that scene is very effective in terms of, like, being, like, I think this movie is, like, a pretty good horror movie, generally speaking. Like, because the scene where Araragi finds Kishot is disturbing because, like, she's there, she's, like, she has no arms or legs. Like, she's in a pile, she's in, like, a pool of her own blood, and like the blood is arranged where it's like kind of like in the form of like a blood angel or something, and like, and she is initially like, she has this demeanor of just like, I'll let you save me, like you can
your dad's calling.
Anyway, so like she's in this pool of her own blood. She has this demeanor of just like, I'll let you save. It's just like this very like haughty vampire sort of thing. And then once Araragi like kind of like balks at it and he starts leaving, like she that breaks entirely and she freaks out in a way that is just like, it has like baby screaming audio.
Yes.
Where
she's thrashing what's left of her arm,
and, like
on
trying
the
to
ground.
Crawl towards him.
Yeah.
And like it is very, I think that scene is very effective.
Yes, it's a movie that I think like starts pretty strong, ends pretty strong, but like just like the middle chunk of that film is just brought down by like how much it feels like you're just kind of going through the motions with these characters.
You know, they say boredom kills people.
It's so fucking
How
funny.
Dare this fucking movie?
Like, and I took that personally.
I did.
Like,
I was waiting for, like, the person holding up the sign at the end of fucking, like, Freddy Got Fingered with, like, when is this movie gonna fucking end?
I was gonna say that's Bree's personal win.
Yeah.
Like, that was so funny. That was such a funny moment to hit that. What were you going to say, Bridget? I think you had a thing there. When I was talking about, like, the middle film, like, you're kind of just going through the motions.
Yeah. Probably because, you know, as I said, the second movie cuts out the most, so it's, like, instead of having breaks, it kind of just...
And this is why we need to put a moratorium on compilation movies. We can't keep doing compilation movies.
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is, like, it genuinely, like, is ruining the pacing of the originally
narrative.
Like, crafted material.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Bridget?
You can't look me in the face and say... Everyone here would have enjoyed watching the first 5 episodes of Gundam Reconquista.
Listen, it's not a matter of whether or not we would have enjoyed that more, but it just genuinely feels like it is doing more of a disservice to the source material that it's being compiled from to do that.
One thing I will... Well, I guess it's the same case in both of them. Never mind.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was like, in both of these cases, it's by the director.
Sure, it might, like, even if the problem is that even when the director is in charge of it, they're still scraping, like, they are, like, having to cut out things that they initially crafted and paced in such a way that it would, at least in their vision of it, work, like, work as intended. And then someone said, like, we gotta fucking trim this down and put this out again for people to have, and they're like, oh, okay, fine, I'll do that. And, you know, it just, it doesn't work as well. Like, I guess I can't objectively say that it doesn't work better than the original movies since I haven't watched them, but, like, there's just an inkling in my bones that's like, I feel like these would at least be better if they breathed more. Like, I can imagine a world where, like, I watch that first hour-long movie, and, you know, maybe it's not, like, the most satisfying thing in the world because, you know, 20 minutes spent talking about panties or whatever, but at the very least there's a deliberate pacing to everything that is occurring in that film that I am watching. So, like, I
understand, know what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
I also understand that I wouldn't subject this group to just that one movie and then be like, okay, podcast on something where nothing, almost nothing happens.
Well, I don't know. I would have stuff to say about it because, like, I do think, like, good vampire stuff happens in that first, like,
yeah,
third.
Yeah. You get that scene in the subway with fucking...
And you get that stuff where, like, Kishan
gets horny and runs through the wall like a fucking cartoon character.
Like, that's that shit is funny.
That's the thing. It's like, this movie at points is very funny. Like, that's another thing that I really appreciate about the Monogatari series is, like, it's buffoonish in, yeah, like, its hijinks at times in a way that's, like, really charming that, like, I think you only, like, fully appreciate when it's allowed to, like, just sit with it.
That's totally fair, because, like, I feel like I would have found the funny bits funnier if I wasn't already checked out mentally.
Yeah, so, like, it's just frustrating. Like, that's
just like the movie. We're gonna, I don't know how to make everybody happy, but I know how to make
everyone
miserable.
Which, I mean, I guess, like, we can... So we've talked about, like, the first chunk, like, the second chunk of the movie, which is just, like, all the fights. Like, I guess we could kind of talk about, like, the fight choreography, yeah, and, like, and that ties into, like, the buffoonish, like, cartoony nature of the Monogatari series at times, because the fights are basically all, like, very goofy at times. Like, there's moments of seriousness in there, but, like, you especially see in that first fight with Dramaturgy, like, that is a fucking slapstick fight.
He's literally reading a book for judo throws and stuff, and then he finally does it, he's like, yeah, and then he's just like,
yeah, Dramaturgy cuts his arms off.
It's truly the most Looney Tunes thing is in, like, the last fight where he uses his hand connected by one vein to, like, Luffy himself up to a fucking,
yeah,
banister.
Yeah, like, it's great. Like, the moments of, like, just violence as spectacle are fan-fucking-tastic in this movie. Like, especially that last sequence with Kishot where they're just, like, continuously punching each other's heads, like, clean off. Like,
yeah, and she's having a great time.
Yeah, she's having a blast. Like, he's getting, like, cut in half while, like, his lower half of his body is running, like, around, and he's running around with the upper half on his hands, like, scuttling around like a bug. Like, it's great. At a certain point, he does, like, a get down Mr. President for Hanakawa, like, gets in the way. Like, he literally explodes into just a cloud of blood. Except for his decapitated head, which latches on to Kishot and, like, sucks the blood, and then, like, the rest of his body forms like a baby from underneath his neck.
It's so horrible. Like, I hated looking at it.
It sucks, but it's great.
That also reminds me of how he runs through and just rams his whole fucking body through her body.
Yeah, and you
and
get,
blows,
like,
blows blood bubbles with his nose on the other,
yeah,
side.
Yeah, like, they have have to get like a little pervert joke in there because he pops out right between her tits. Like, just it's like, it sucks, but it's great. And I think that's the thing about the Monogatari series.
There's some real like Sam Raimi Evil Dead shit going on.
Yeah, that's a good correlation on that. But like that is the best.
Man, we should watch the Evil Dead.
We should watch Evil Dead. But like I think that's like the best way to summarize the Monogatari series is like, it sucks and it's great. Like that is the way that I would
describe this movie as that. I don't know about the TV show.
Yeah, there are some real lolos in this movie, but like I think there's like some really there's some cool stuff in there too. Because like I did like it as like a vampire story.
I like when she just takes a whole bite out of that dude's head, like,
it's like Jerry eating a full triangle wedge of cheese, and it just gets stuck in her mouth while she tries to swallow it. And then that comes back later, because in that scene she says, like, hey, get the fuck out of here. Like, you don't watch a lady while she eats. And then later on, once she's gotten her full form back, like, Araragi, before he has the dumbass realization of, like, oh, right, she's a fucking vampire.
She eats people. Fuck.
Like, walks in on her just eating guilting cutter whole, like just taking full chunks of flesh,
messily devouring that man.
Yeah, like she's like, you know, she's
it's trying to wipe away blood off her face and getting more blood on her face. Which also, we need to talk about how there's a guy called Guillotine Cutter.
The three assholes that we referred to earlier. There's like a dude named Dramaturgy who has like blade arms.
Yes.
There's a guy named Episode who has like a wolfwood giant cross that he throws at people.
And it's also made of mist, apparently.
Yeah, he also does, like, the Alucard, like, mist step type stuff.
And also, there's a nice little running joke in that thing where it keeps cutting to a shot of him.
This is a very funny shot of just him, like, misting at the camera.
Yeah.
And there's a guy named Guillotine Cutter who kind of does the least.
Yeah.
Yeah, he even said... himself, he can't do much, but he is strong enough to at least crush someone.
He is, of the three of those guys, the only one who's not a vampire, apparently.
Yeah, it seems that way. And, like, the only advantage
and
he
the
has...
only one who gets eaten.
Yes.
I don't know.
And the only because he could leave it alone. He couldn't just leave.
Yeah, that is true. He was like, I'm gonna go in for the kill.
And instead, he fucking gets got bad.
After he was crucified, by the way...
where Araragi actually like crucifies this man with weird hellish vampiric like wood
tree limbs.
That part's weird. I don't know what that power is.
That is one of those things where it feels like that a lot of that would be explained by the bits that were cut out of that second.
That's probably
a light novel thing that gets explained more so. Here's another thing that we have not addressed whatsoever. What's up with all the Japanese flags?
That's a good question.
Yeah, like, so the place that my brain was going, like, especially as you go into that final confrontation, especially when you have that bit that's, like, kind of, where, like, they're having, like, the radio broadcaster for, like, the Tokyo Olympics, like,
post-World
War
II. Yeah, it takes place in the Olympic...
The Olympic Coliseum, and, like, the closest thing that I could think of as to, like, something that this movie is trying to talk about, especially when you consider the, like, connection that Kishot has to, like, what seems to be some kind of, like, shogunate character that, like, she initially had made into a thrall the first time. It's, like, it seems to almost kind of, like, be talking about, like, Japan as, like, a nationalist, like, country and empire in some ways, and, like, how Kishot is, like, the last vestiges of empire, just being like, just fucking let me die, and, like, Araragi being the monster as, like, the citizens of that country being like, no, You are
gonna
stuck.
Keep you alive in like a complete buried like,
in a vegetable know, state.
Yeah, like that. That's what I kind of read that as, more or less.
Well, it was funny because I was talking to you before we watched this movie, and I said, "Oh, the other poster has kids shot with the Japanese flag," and you didn't recognize the flag at first because it's just like a red dot.
Yeah, it's, well, not just it's a red dot, but the background on the poster that she's talking about is also, like, entirely red. Mm-hmm. So it's red backdrop with kiss shot and then, like, the Japanese, like, rising sun flag over her. Well, specifically, it's not, like, the rising sun, like, the old, like, imperial Japanese flag that has, like, the rays of the sun mm-hmm. coming off of it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that in and of itself, if you want to, like, start drawing, like, visual metaphor connections, you could essentially say that that's what Kiss Shot is like when she is first discovered in the subway. Like, she has literally had her limbs cut off of her, so, like, that is the rising sun after, like, immediately post-World War II. Like, just completely fucking, like, completely shut down as an entity as a result of, you know, of the war, of getting nuked twice by the United States, like, United States occupation of Japan, like, that. But the thing that ends up being frustrating is it doesn't really feel like it's saying too much outside of that.
It feels like, yeah, it is, if that is something that it is trying to say, it's very much a tertiary concern.
We do learn vampires make good missiles. You can just go surface.
Yeah, the missile
surface.
It's one of the coolest things about the vampire shit in this is just the inventive ways that they end up fighting.
Just like, we catch on fire in sunlight, but that means we can also make ourselves into missiles.
Yeah.
You live for 500 years and you can't kill yourself. You start finding creative ways to kill others.
Which that, God, like, again, it just goes to, like, what makes the movie so frustrating. It's like, I think if those characters were allowed to breathe more, like, especially that arc for Kiss Shot would feel more potent than it ends up being at the end of the day. Because, like, the whole...
When she becomes old... child.
Oh God, fucking terrible.
Yeah.
But like the conceit of her character is like she essentially like kind of just let herself at first be killed, like get those limbs chopped off by that group of dudes, and was just like, yeah, I mean, I'll just
I guess I'm gonna die here.
Yeah, whatever. I guess I'll die here. And the whole reason that she like starts calling out to Araragi as she gets cold feet at the last second.
Yeah, like, you're all fine about dying till you
actually
are face-to-face with death.
Yes, until you end up finding a way to die in a way that you feel is, like, does you the right dignity of your death, when, like, at the end of the day, you're still gonna die regardless. Like, that ends up being the thing that's so fucking disrespectful about how things end up playing out for her, because, like, essentially, like, in this final confrontation, we kind of mentioned it before, but, like, essentially Oshino finally comes in, breaks up the fight between the two of them, and is just like, okay, listen up, you stupid motherfuckers, there is no way that everyone comes out of this happy. Like, the only solution we have is that everyone here is miserable. What you need to do, Aradagi, is you need to basically, like, suck her blood until she is, like, only able to live as, like, a part vampire, like, you live a quasi-existence, essentially, where you don't even have a name.
Yeah, it's like, of the three people there, you know, Kiss Shot, Araragi, and
Hanakawa
was there, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Kiss Shot has to be diminished to the point where she doesn't even have a name anymore. She kind of just exists as, like...
Mm-hmm.
It's depicted as a child, but it's talked about as if she is, like... like a fucking specter or whatever.
Yeah.
And Araragi, in order to not have to kill someone, has to
let her
feed off of him. Forever. But he won't completely be a vampire. He'll still kind of mostly be a human. Yeah.
And Hanakawa is stuck with the reality that, like, one day these two could just decide
become vampires again and eat everyone. Yeah. It's
very much a everyone loses type scenario, but
somebody
Kishot loses the most.
Yeah, she loses the most for like the worst reason.
Yeah, and
and Oshino even says, "It's like, well, congratulations, you defanged the cat, you crushed its throat, you
domesticated a vampire. Good job."
Like, you have forced this entity to exist as just a completely neutered version of itself.
Yeah. To the point where it doesn't seem to really have an identity anymore.
Yeah. And then you have that, like, last shot of, like, Araragi and Kishot, like, sitting together, and he kind of looks at her, like, lightly sympathetically, just like,
"Oh,
yeah, I did that to you."
Yeah.
And then just credits.
Yeah,
credits. Yeah, it's not
to the point that Evie was like, "Wait, that's the end?" It's just like, fucking monster. He's a fucking monster. He's at worst.
It's wild that there's like a whole ass series where he's the main character after this.
Yeah, history's greatest.
Is Hanakawa for the rest of that series just like, at a moment's notice, I have to be ready to kill this guy?
No, she's... How would you describe her, like, in that original, like,
sorry,
in that Bakemono series?
She's mostly friendly and stuff. I mean, the thing is, she has her own personal problem.
Yeah, that ends up being the thing, is she ends up being one of the characters that's afflicted by one of those kinds of scenarios, and Araragi, like, helps her go through that.
Yeah, because, like, I understand her being friendly with him after, because, like, she has a thing for him, and also just like, I have to stay close to the quasi vampire just in case he needs to get staked.
At the very least, I need to know what's gonna happen when it's gonna happen.
I say this is like an effective horror movie, but also it feels like it was not made as a horror movie.
I mean, it's definitely bloody. If you just wanted to.
It's a very violent movie.
Yeah.
More than
anything. I think it's like, I think if you ask,
she gets her in. He's like trying to shove his
intestines back.
Hanakawa gets it real bad in this movie. Like,
I love that she has a moment like after she gets her intestines knocked out, where he's like doting over her, like, oh god, and she's just like, fucking
keep it together, you stupid dickhead.
You need to get your shit together.
You're fighting a mist man. Figure it out.
Think for a second.
I'm gonna die over here. Just leave me alone.
What defeats mist?
It's sand, I guess.
Sure, whatever.
This fight is stupid. This is like,
and then he chokes out of her.
Yeah, that of the three, like, of the three fights, only the dramaturge one is really like good.
Well, that's the only one that's like a real physical fight.
Yeah.
Because the other fight, he's just running away, like,
yeah, he's
scared.
He's getting his ass beat by this giant cross.
Yeah. Which I guess that ends up
being. He sees Jesus.
Which I guess that ends up being, like, also part of the disappointment for me in those movies, getting, like, edited down as such, because you don't get to. Those fights don't get as fleshed out.
Hmm.
I mean, you said to yourself the second movie is the one that, like, gets cut down the most.
Yeah, but not the fights.
Oh, okay.
It's the more,
the character moments.
The Hanakawa stuff.
Which, again, I think that movie does her dirty by not including those things.
I agree.
Wait, okay.
What?
So you think this movie would be better if it were three separate parts that allowed each of the characters to breathe?
Yeah.
But, like, the fact is she didn't care enough about it to, like, spend three picks on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the format of. Fine, no compilation movies after this. Don't worry, okay. I won't. I'll be good and pick things like The Winds of the Willows or.
And now look at her be a brat. Like, she's just like,
That's part of what made the lead up to this so funny, is that Bridget was like hyping it up, saying like, this is the good choice. Like, I was doing you all a solid by picking this thing.
I said that about the horse movie too.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, here's the thing. I ultimately don't hate this
movie. Yeah, sorry, you go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah, I think like there's a lot to like here, but like I feel like this would be a movie that I think is like good if it had that stuff we've been talking about. Like, but honestly, who knows if it has that stuff when it's built out into three movies? Bridget knows. I don't know. Yeah. So it's like, it's forever going to be a question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who could figure out the answer?
If only someone could lead us.
If only there were some way that we could watch all three of the movies individually.
Yeah, there's no way.
There's no way it could happen.
It's no way it could happen because it would require...
It's impossible now.
We can't just go back and watch them.
I can't watch all that shit again.
I know, I'm not gonna.
I was gonna say, there's no way Brie is, at the very least.
Maybe next year.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know, Kiss Shot... Top tier movie vampire.
Like, yeah, she's great. Like, the interactions and some of the animations when she is in her child form are not great.
Yep.
I hate it. Yeah.
Like, and that is the thing that also carries over into Bakemonogatari. There's, like, definitely shots.
I wish I could say I'm shocked.
Shots where she's in a dress and will like get up in such a way that it comes down and she just has a band-aid over that area. It's like, that's fucking gross. That
sucks.
Don't like that shit.
As I said, don't watch Monogatari.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. but like there's that one exchange where Araragi, well, when they're fighting and Araragi's like, I'm a human, and she's like, well, I'm a vampire. Yes. And like she knows who she is.
Yeah. Oh, when she pulls the fucking katana out of herself?
Like, where she's just, like, apparently just been keeping it in there the entire time.
It's fucking cool.
It's cool as shit.
And then she just goes like this and then goes...
Like, it's really, really fucking cool. But yeah, I was basically just gonna second what Evie said there, and that, like, I don't hate this movie at all. It's a frustrating movie for me in parts, but at the very least, like, comparing it to something like a Uma Musume, which was also a frustrating movie, there is at least more in this that, like, I pulled something out of versus Uma Musume. But I think that's probably mostly to thank on the fact that I have experience with this franchise.
And for me, I mean, they both felt twice as long as their actual run length.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was so evil that we paused halfway through this movie, and I said,
it was right at the beginning of the guillotine cutter fight, where, like, it's an hour and, like, 20-something.
Hour 21,
hour
I think.
Hour 21. And
I say
just like, oh, we're going to wrap this thing up real soon.
I say, oh no, seeing the timestamp and knowing how long this movie is, and you ask me, like, what? And I was like, Evie, look at the timestamp. Do you know how long this movie is? And I say how long it is, and you just are like, what? And Bridget's response is to, like, hit an ecstasy pose and be like, yes, let it wash over me in this moment.
It's really the most evil Bridget has ever
You and
seen.
I have both kind of shown signs of being a sociopath in the past month, I'll tell you.
I mean, you viewers at home, you have to realize it's very cute when Evie does her, oh my god, this movie is...
you all will feel it soon.
No, I felt it before. That's how I felt with Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
You don't even know.
I thought I was going to be that like that
Everyone's
in the last...
It's going to suck forever.
I thought it was going to be like that yesterday, but that
Bree's
movie was really...
Bree's here, and I feel bad about that, but not that bad.
I thought it was going to be that for the movie yesterday, but that movie was really fucking good.
Yeah.
That, oh, no, that God. You want to talk about good pacing.
That movie is
one battle after another, we should clarify.
Yeah. One battle after another is 2.5 hours long and feels like a fucking breeze. Yeah. Like, that is a great movie. Anyways, I feel like, are we at final thoughts now?
We've already been talking about our final thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's get to it.
Bridget, final thoughts on Kizumonogatari Koyomi Vamp.
I think this is a movie that, or you can either watch this or separately, whatever. Both versions all have good spots and bad spots. I think you should maybe watch it once and then never again. It's definitely not my favorite movie, not by a long shot. However, I do appreciate moments of it, which do stick in my head.
And this is the good choice, that it just has moments that stick out.
Sometimes that's enough for a movie. I mean, it's not a movie I want to own. But...
All right, let's get the vitriol out of the way. Bree, what are your final thoughts on this movie? And try not to be too mean about it.
You know, they say boredom kills people.
Uh-huh.
No, what might not be obvious with this not being a video podcast as usual is that I've been visibly zoning out this whole time due to this movie absolutely draining me and any of the mental spoons I had left for the day by forcing me and my Venn diagram of autism and ADHD to try and focus on what was going on. Nothing pains me more than an hours-long snail's-paced nightmare of dialogue and trite lore dumping on characters I don't fucking care about, and not even lore, but attempts to character narratives and motives who outside of that are characters so short-played and unsubstantial that you can't feel any gravity in anything that happens. So it just keeps going, and I'm waiting, begging for it to end.
And that's your final thoughts?
Yeah.
Thank you for that, Bree.
You're welcome. Happy
Listeners at home, I can corroborate that this whole episode, she has just kind of been, like, eyes, like, kind of down, just, like, very sunken.
There were portions of the movie where I was just like, man, that tree is far away.
I feel like I've made my final thoughts, like, basically known, which is just, like, it's a frustrating movie. It's something, it has bursts of brilliance in it. It's got a really strong atmosphere to it, and I think there's moments of, like, character stuff in it. What's up, Bridget?
The other thing I forgot to say is, like, the main theme just makes me think of The Thing. It has that...
It has a very John Carpenter, like, flair to some of the score in it. I actually did notice that as well. Like, it has, like, just that...
Dun-dun, dun-dun.
Like, that, like, like 80s synth-y.
Yeah,
like,
we did recently watch Prince of Darkness.
What a good movie.
Oh, yeah, that was another thing we watched.
If only we could be talking about Prince of Darkness instead.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, a frustrating experience. I would say if you are going to watch it, watch the separate films, and that would probably be the ideal way to experience it. But aside from that, I didn't hate it. There's things about it that I enjoy, but ultimately just kind of frustrated. Evie? Final thoughts?
Yeah, I wonder how it would have been if we did watch the three separate films, like, because, like, we would have, like, an entire cycle in between each one, too, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be, like, there would be a lot of time for it to breathe and for either for it to breathe or for us to, like, dread it coming back around again.
I can't imagine... That's the one thing I would be like, you watch the first figure, you're like, this is awful.
This sucked. And then the second one is just like, okay, I'm picking up what you're putting down. And like the third one, like we would be popping off.
Yeah.
It like, might not be popping off of that second movie. No.
Well, the third one.
Yeah, she was saying
off.
The third one.
Yeah,
because
like
off.
it would have been a build.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Like, there were some bits in the third movie, Brie, where even you, like, despite your, like, morose overall feeling, like, there are a couple of things that, like, you, even you, cut, like, kind of chuckled at
mm-hmm.
while that was happening.
Again, maybe I could have, if things were paced right, enjoyed something about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do, like, because it is such a, it would have been a big ask for Bridget to spend, like, three cycles worth of her picks on, like, one series, right? It would have been like a... No, we haven't tried such a thing. It's a...
Oh, no.
It's a real... It would have been a real... kind of endeavor. But anyway...
Is it time for Nambla?
What's
it called?
My pick.
Yeah. What's the connection you got?
I think it's fine.
I never said it's Maya Sakamoto is the voice.
Oh yeah, Maya Sakamoto, who's
Juliet.
Yeah,
connects to Kisha.
Yes, is the voice of Kisha, and she. I could have connected to Star Wars. She was the voice of Padme in the prequel trilogy.
Oh,
would have been good. Takahiro Sakurai, who is the voice of Ushino. Is Edward Cullen in Twilight, all the Twilight movies, which would have been fucking sick. Masashi Ibare, one of those two. I'm sorry, my handwriting's bad. He's in a ton of shit. He's Robin Williams' character in Jumanji, and this is all. These are like the dub voice.
I thought Robin Williams was Robin Williams at Jumanji.
He does the voice of Freddy Krueger in Freddy vs. Jason. Most relevantly, he is Lestat in Interview for a Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And he's Simon Phoenix in Demolition Man. But my connection is instead Hochu Otsuka, who plays Dramaturgy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is also in a lot of stuff. He's Zeus in Die Hard 3. Mm. He's Agent Smith in The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
He's Cary Elwes' character, Dr. Gordon, in Saw.
Uh-huh.
This is very interesting. He's Mary in the 1978 Lord of the Rings animated film.
Oh.
Yeah. And that is, it's interesting because I'm connecting him. He's also the voice of Aragorn in Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Project Melon.
Speak, friend, and enter.
Yes.
Okay.
It's time.
What did I say, Nambla?
You said Project Nambla, which is very incorrect. Are you okay, Bree?
Bree's not going to be okay.
No.
I'm sorry, Bree.
It's been great working on this project with y'all. I just want to thank you again for the opportunity.
Well, Bree, where can people find you on the internet if this is the last time you're joining us?
In case you don't hear from me again, you can hear from me over on twitch.tv/easybreezyTV. That's EazyBreezyTV TV on Twitch. You can also find me at Asnesbo, ASNESBO, on VGen. So vgen.co/Asnesbo. You can find me there to see my artwork and stuff. You can commission me to do art. They'll have a lot more time for it now. That's about it.
What were you gonna say?
I think we should allow Bree to file a conscientious objector for this particular series.
I mean, to be fair,
like, you can do a side thing.
I was gonna say we have always left the door open for if something really is not. We know it's not gonna be, like, the flavor for one of us that they can dip out if they want to.
I'm one of those people for whom, like, this form of high fantasy bores the living shit out of me.
I do feel like it's a little bit unfair, mostly just because you are the pick after Evie, so you would have to join us in some respect or another for that discussion.
She could just, like, leave a note and we can read it.
Yeah. I'll leave a post-it note. Well, I'll put it upside down under this mic on the table, and then you get to flip that over and find out what the connection is.
Oh no, and it's after. And it's the doctor for the Simpsons that he punches.
Dr. Hibbert.
Bridget, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm streaming on Sasquatchulous at twitch.tv/Sasquatchulous. I'm not streaming right now, or at least for a few weeks, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, Not obviously, but right now. And then I guess I'm on Blue Sky. I don't know.
Yeah. Evie,
can I am too, but who gives a shit?
Can people find you on the internet, Evie?
Nah.
Yeah, you can't find me on the internet. I'm not going to tell you where you can find me, but you can find the podcast at putonthelist.bsky.social, putonthelist.neocities.org. You can find us anywhere major podcasts are sold. You can send us emails at wifecitygaming@gmail.com. Please follow us, like, share, subscribe, comment, whatever the various social media things are. Share us with your friends, though. We're a good time. Maybe this episode isn't the most indicative of it, but we're a good time.
We had fun here.
We're gonna have.
I had fun.
We're gonna have a real fellowship between all of us the next time we record.
Yeah.
What's up, Richard?
You know what that means.
What does that mean?
We're gonna do the Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings, baby.
No, she would. You would have to go through two.
Oh yeah, I know.
To get to that.
Mm-hmm. I think I can do it.
She shot me.
Don't fucking threaten me with a good time.
Why am I the one that doesn't get to have fun? Why did I get picked on?
Wait,
goodbye.
What's wrong with Ralph Bakshi?
Goodbye, everyone. There's a lot of things wrong with Ralph Bakshi.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
What do you
well,
mean?
I mean, we're not
the
time
of this chair.
Town.
Somebody help me, for
we're
the love of God.
About...
Get me out.
What we view's connected by cast or crew deciding the next film. That's the gist. Put it on the list.
Evie's going full toasty mode.
Yeah.
Toasty!
I've been chilly all day today.
It's been very chilly in this house today, to be fair.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I don't know how you handle it so well, considering that you come from a state where it's always hot.
Well, it's a state that's always hot. That's why you're never outside.
Oh, so you're just inundated with AC. Yeah, scoot your chair back so you don't keep bumping the table. But yeah, so you're just inundated with the cold.
Well, the house temperature is normally 72, and the outside temperature is 90 plus.
I mean, I can't say I'm a stranger to that at all, having lived in Arizona for a few years.
How about the Mets? Love the Mets.
Love the Monogataris.
Actually, no. I do not, in fact, like Monogataris.
It's so funny that you don't like this series that much, and even basically admitted that you don't like chunks of this movie and still chose it.
You can, like, not like chunks of a movie and still appreciate parts of the movie.
I